Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. They say you can beat the rap, but you can't beat the ride. That means if you break the law, you might not get convicted, but the arrest is enough to wreck your life, and it could keep wrecking your life forever. Is that fair? 1 in 4 Americans have a criminal record. 8.6% have a felony conviction. How should we treat that information about those individuals? If you've had a run-in with the law, how has the fallout impacted you, even after paying your debt to society? We invite you to join our conversation. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. And you can email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. And so we're joined by Professor James B. Jacobs. He's the author of The Eternal Criminal Record, professor of constitutional law, director of the Center for Research in Crime and Justice at New York University School of Law. Professor Jacobs, welcome to The Source.
I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, so are we creating a separate class of people in the United States, of people who have a criminal record and people who they are losing out on many of the benefits of being a full-blown citizen?
Well, I don't know that it would be a whole class, but it is true that records are much more available now than people a generation ago could have imagined. I mean, they are really at people's fingertips. There are all kinds of companies that provide criminal and other background information. There are apps that do it. A lot of this information is online and can be done, with your home laptop. So I would say that, as in many other facets of our lives, our biographies are much more public.
So our biographies, our criminal records, if we have one, have become a commodity. There are agencies out there willing to and able to make a buck off of that information.
Well, that's true. There are businesses that provide background information to companies, to landlords, even to people interested in somebody romantically who they've met.
Sure. You can just do it with the click of a button. I mean, in my job, I got to try and find people sometime to interview them, track them down. And it comes up right away. You wanted to run a criminal background check on this guy, and it's only for...
Exactly. Exactly. It's a very competitive business. There are hundreds of companies out there doing it. To some extent, it's not conceptually new, because our records, our court records, have always been open to the public.
Right, but now in our society, with the new information we have at our fingertips, that information is much more accessible. But don't we have a right to know? I mean, I would like to know who I'm renting my house to, and if they have a criminal record, then that criminal record could be a big red flag.
I agree with that. In general, we would tend to think that more information is usually better than less information, and I'm skeptical of the government deciding which information is good enough for people to have, and whether people can use this information properly or wisely or not. I'm not keen on cutting off the sources of information, even if we could do that. Now, a lot of companies that want to know about the backgrounds of people that they're going to hire and put face-to-face with the public and with other employees. We want to know that about babysitters. We want to know it about people who drive our buses. We want to know it about business partners. So this is part of people's contacts with the criminal justice system is an important part of their biography. Of course, people could also make too much of it, in my opinion, or maybe, but their opinions would differ as to how much to make of it.
Right. In a perfect world,
But generally, I have faith in people that they're not crazy. If we get this when people apply to our law school and they put on their application, I was convicted of drunken disorderly when I was a freshman in college. I mean, that doesn't, we don't, oh my God, we understand these things happen. But if a person has revealed 3 alcohol-related convictions, convictions over the course of their college career, that gives us pause. And if they've been convicted for computer intrusions, that might be disqualifying.
Okay. Let's go to the phone lines. The number is 210-614-8980. We're speaking with Professor James P. Jacobs, author of the book The Eternal Criminal Record. Mike is on the line. Mike, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I've had a couple of DWIs, and it's very difficult for me to get any kind of transportation jobs, you know, truck driver or cab service. But also, something that you might want to mention as well is that my credit is really bad, and employers look at that. And a lot of government jobs that I've applied for, I've applied for hundreds. I can't even get any kind of interviews for that because of my bad credit.
So, Mike, your DWIs, are they long gone in your past, or is that something of recent history?
Oh, I got one in 99 and one in 2010.
Okay.
So I got two of them. But if I get another one, then it's going to be a felony.
Yeah, that's bad news. All right, Mike, thanks for calling, and thanks for sharing your story with us. So, Professor Jacobs, so getting that felony, that's something that Mike definitely wants to avoid getting, because that's when you know you've really crossed over the line. What happens when you get a felony?
Yeah, so then a felony, there's certain disqualifications that kick in. You know, the government's local and state and even the federal government have passed laws barring people with certain backgrounds from certain positions because of national security concerns, because of safety concerns, and so forth. You know, I'm somewhat sympathetic with that. I think if I were running a bus company or a school district and we were looking for bus drivers, I would find a person with two DWI convictions in the last 10 years to be ineligible. There are plenty of other people to hire who don't have those DWI convictions.
Right, and because
too much at stake.
And the bus company has to.
And also, you know, you can be, if something happens, then the company can be sued.
The liability.
Can be held liable.
Exactly, that's what I was getting to.
Yeah.
And so they have to adopt that risk when they hire somebody who has a sketchy background of some sort. But life is more complicated than that. We have people of varying degrees of backgrounds. Sometimes it's not always so cut and dry as a straight-up DWI.
That's absolutely absolutely true, and there are advocacy groups that work in this area. They often come forward with outrageous cases that, you know, somebody 30 years before had done something, and then they're barred by a law or simply excluded by an employer, and you think, geez, that seems mindless and unfair. I'm more concerned with government's actions than I am with private businesses. I think private businesses should have a lot of leeway in hiring who they want, especially when they are going to be liable for any harms committed by their employees.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Professor Jacobs. If you get a felony, things like losing your right to keep and bear arms taken away from you, you have some loss of political rights, loss of social benefits, being able to be on a jury, all sorts of issues. Join the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the book, The Eternal Criminal Record, with Professor James B. Jacobs, the author of the book, and he is also the professor of constitutional law, director of the Center for Research in Crime and Justice at New York University School of Law. So law-abiding citizens have the right to know when an individual in their community or workplace represents a potential threat, and we can judge that threat by their past behavior and if they've got a criminal record. But convicted persons, they've got rights too. So how do we strike a balance? And this is what Professor Jacobs is after, trying to figure that out. And the phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. And let's go to the phones with Connie. Connie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. My question is that I have a daughter who at just turned 18 and received a misdemeanor charge for marijuana. Now at the age of 25, she is still struggling with trying to find a place to live and employment, even after serving her debt to society. The answer that we had was just, you know, you would have to pay to get that expunged, even though it was a minor charge, a misdemeanor charge. And that really hinders our young people today when they're trying to move forward, just like the case you said about the college student who had a drunken disorder charge.
All right, Connie, thank you for that call. Appreciate it. She tells a great story. You know, is it one strike and you're out for life, Professor Jacobs?
Well, I don't know. Obviously, I don't know the circumstances of that case. What I do know that marijuana possession is very common in the society, and I don't think simple possession in many spheres would be looked at as disqualifying, certainly not at for example, in college admissions. Whether there are laws in Texas about any person who has a misdemeanor is not eligible, I doesn't sound likely to me. But I don't know. Usually there's a line between felonies and misdemeanors. So it's hard for me to and what she said about that you have to pay to get something purged, that also doesn't ring true to me. Many states have rules about convictions being purged after a certain amount of time if you have no further convictions. That is quite sensible, I think, to have those laws, and they don't charge you for that. There are some unscrupulous companies that put this stuff on the internet, and then they contact you and they say, if you pay us, we'll take it off the internet. It's almost a kind of extortion. And all around the country, states are trying to figure out ways to stop that from happening.
But we know that marijuana use and possession is something that is across the board in society. But we also know that the police tend to make more arrests in minority communities rather than the white communities on those charges. And then on the other side of it, as you go through that process and you're now looking for a job, that employers will apply that information differently. They're more willing to accept and forgive a white person with that on their record than they are with the minority person.
That may be true. You know, that's a very disturbing statement. And, you know, I hope it's not generally true. And I hope for a lot of employers are not racially discriminatory that way. And if they are racially discriminatory that way, they could do it without reference to a marijuana conviction. I mean, they could find any number of things bad. For example, your interview was bad, right? While as the white person's interview was good.
Sure.
So, you know,
okay.
Look, there are abuses. Obviously, there are abuses. This is a tough question. That's why I wrote a book about it. There are a lot of issues here to unpack when we talk about what's the proper role of criminal background information in a democratic society. It's a complicated issue, and it's really come upon us in a big way, given the information revolution of the last couple of decades.
Let's go to another caller with David. David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I'm enjoying the show. I've hired people with felonies. One case, the guy, I knew him well enough to know he had a very powerful spiritual awakening while he was in prison, and literally, you know, is not the same person. But I also I want to be able to see a situation where a person like that, who's paid their debt and they've stayed out of trouble, to, you know, be able to have a fresh start. And I, you know, I'm an airline pilot in that industry, and I don't want to see people in the cockpit that have drug issues and alcohol addiction issues and all that, you know, DUIs and so on. But I'm wondering if there can be some kind of system where, you know, government agencies can see, you know, people's past, you know, criminal records and so on, without necessarily having all of that disclosed to private companies for a person who's stayed out of trouble for a period of time. I just wonder if that's already being done or can be done.
All right, David, thank you. So David has a different point of view than you, Professor. He thinks that the government should have access to this information, not so much to private hands.
Yeah, that would be a different position than I have. It would be a position more like what exists in Europe, where there's much more confidence in, you know, the government, let the government handle this, and the government is wise, the people are problematic. We have always had open court records. We have a very strong commitment to transparency of the criminal justice system, who's been arrested, who's been convicted, and by inference, who is not arrested, who's not convicted. I mean, and that helps us to scrutinize, you know, the fairness of the criminal justice system and to critique it. We also have this commitment to the First Amendment. So newspapers have always been free to publish arrests as well as convictions. This information gets out there. I don't think at this stage in the information revolution it's any longer possible to put the genie back in the bottle and say, oh, well, you know, we will keep this information confidential. I don't think that's feasible.
Okay, another caller, Julie. Hey, Julie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey.
Hey there.
Well, I don't really have a question as much as a comment, and you've kind of touched on it, but just listening to this, I'm reading an interesting book about, it's called The New Jim Crow, and it's talking about mass incarceration of people of color, for many of them for very minor crimes, you know, mostly to do with the drugs. Basically, that the war on drugs has left us with an entire generation of mostly young black men in jail. They come out with felony records, and then they can't vote. They can't do a lot of things, but they're being disenfranchised. So I just recommend the book to everybody.
Okay.
But what gets me, too, is that, you know, there's a lot of people out there who have done a lot worse things, and they're white, and they will never see a prison. You know, for instance, the people that bankrupted our country. I mean, there was definite, you know, there was fraud and all kinds of things. But
you got that right, Julie. Thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate that. So the thing about voting, a lot of people think that when you get a felony that you lose the right to vote, but not so much. Right, Professor?
Well, there's been a lot of reform in that around the country. So, it used to be that in a significant number of states, you were disenfranchised for the rest of your life. But that's not the case now in practically any state. I don't think it may be only in one or two states. I know in New York State, and this is probably the same in Texas, once you are finished serving your sentence, your voting rights are reactivated.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't realize that.
That's all very interesting. But, you know, also the rates at which people vote are so low.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of funny conversation, you know, about that, you know, how important it is. And then people don't really take advantage of it and don't exercise their right to vote.
One last caller with Mike. Hi, Mike. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. This is an incredibly important issue, and so much of society doesn't know about it because I guess they don't have anybody in their family, but I run a nonprofit organization in San Antonio and to help people with disabilities find jobs, and I would say close to 30% of our people have something in their background that is impacting their ability to get a job. And I just want to throw this one example out there. I had a person who was in his 60s who was trying to get a janitorial job part-time. And in his background, in his early 20s, he had 3 DUIs, and they immediately excluded him. And I guess the question I have is, you know, I know that we're a society that likes to put people in jail. When do we say that this debt has been paid? And when do we say that after how many years of good, clean living, can we now look at these people and say, hey, you know, you're a good risk. This person was free of any kind of offense.
All right, so Mike, I'm short on time, so I got to get to the answer. Would your name your nonprofit?
Oh, yeah, it's called CLC of San Antonio.
All right, thank you. So let me get Professor Jacobs to answer. So
you often hear this about the debt being paid, and I think if I were a private employer, I'd say, you know, I'm not saying that you should be punished. I'm not thinking here I'm punishing you by not hiring you. My concern is to hire workers, employees who are going to be safe, who are reliable, who are self-disciplined.
What about having that conversation about your criminal record, not the first part of the conversation, but later on, and giving someone a chance to prove that they've turned their life around?
I think that would be very fair, and I think that would be the right thing to do.
All right, Professor James B. Jacobs. His book is The Eternal Criminal Record. He is a professor of crime and justice at New York University School of Law. Thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you. It was a pleasure.
And this is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for tuning us in.